Headlines: Iran's president warns the U.S. against extending the Afghanistan war to neighboring Pakistan. The U.S. says it does not apologize for its recent military operation north of the Pakistani capital, Islamabad.
We also do not apologize for the action that we took, that this president took.
Several explosions rocked the Libyan capital Tripoli as the embattled ruler Gaddafi's compound comes under attack. And several people are killed as Yemeni forces open fire on anti-regime protesters. Hello, it's 7:30 a.m. here in Tehran. You're with Press TV's World News. The top story this hour: Iran's president has warned his U.S. counterpart Barack Obama against extending the war in Afghanistan to neighboring Pakistan.
یه احتمال دیگه هم میدیم که اونها میخوان دامنه درگیری رو به پاکستان گسترش بدن که من همینجا به آقای اوباما هشدار میدم از سرنوشت بوش عبرت بگیره، از توسعه تجاوز دست برداره. بهترین راه برای او اینه که نیروهاشو جمع کنه، از منطقه ما خارج بشود. و به او میگم اگر دست به چنین تصمیم اشتباهی بزند، به سرنوشت بدتر و ننگینتر از بوش دوچار خواهد شد. استانبول هم در این باره چند بار صحبت.
احمدی‌نژاد was speaking at a news briefing in Istanbul where he has attended the UN conference on the least developed countries. He said the US invaded the region after the 9/11 attacks under the pretext of fighting terror, but there's never been an independent investigation into the events. Elsewhere, Ahmadinejad underlined the need for reforming the UN structure. He said world nations have come to the conclusion that the UN body must be reformed because it's under the control of a few world powers. Well, earlier we spoke to editor of the Executive Intelligence Review, Jeff Steinberg. He says extending military operations to Pakistan will backfire on President Obama.
The president has been in a manic euphoria ever since last Sunday when the killing of Osama bin Laden was announced, and he's trying to basically milk that event for all it's worth with the American people, knowing that just before that killing, support for his presidency and his reelection was collapsing because of economic problems and also because of the continuation of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. So any idea that he has about broadening, using the precedent of the bin Laden killing to expand the war into Pakistan, I think will be probably a fatal political mistake for him if he tries to go that way, even though you're right, there's indications that that is exactly what he's entertaining.
The U.S. says it will not apologize for entering Pakistan and launching a raid on a house allegedly belonging to Osama bin Laden.
We also do not apologize for the action that we took, that this president took. He said, dating back to the campaign, if there is an opportunity to bring Osama bin Laden to justice and he is on Pakistani soil, and this is the only way we can do it unilaterally, he will take that chance and do it, and he did.
During his briefing, the White House press secretary said, quote, the U.S. president had the right and imperative to launch such an operation. This comes as controversy continues over bin Laden's fate. Last week, Washington announced that its special forces killed bin Laden in the attack without informing Islamabad. It also called for an access to bin Laden's widows, who are presently held in the ISA custody. Meanwhile, the raid has worsened the already strained relations between Islamabad and Washington. Pakistan's Prime Minister Yusuf Reza Gilani says Islamabad reserves the right to retaliate with full force. Former Pakistani President Pervez Musharraf has also accused the U.S. of violating Pakistan's sovereignty.
But we also do not apologize.
And before we move on, let's take a look at this breaking news just appearing there on your screen. NATO has announced that another foreign soldier has been killed in a bomb blast in the south of Afghanistan. No news yet on the nationality of that soldier and where exactly it happened. We'll be, of course, watching out for details on that development in Afghanistan. In other news now, the Libyan capital has come under a barrage of airstrikes. Among the targets is the compound of Libya's embattled ruler, Muammar Gaddafi. Witnesses say jets carried out a series of strikes early on Tuesday on different targets in Tripoli. Hours earlier, the state media building was hit by missiles. It's not immediately known if there have been any casualties. The attacks come a day after NATO chief Anders Fogh Rasmussen said time was running out for Gaddafi and that he had no future in Libya. The Libyan government says NATO attacks are targeting civilians and claims many have been killed as the result of the attacks. NATO denies the allegation and says it's targeting government forces who pose threats to civilians. Meanwhile, the United Nations has warned of a humanitarian situation in Libya, saying it cannot provide an accurate figure for the number of casualties in the conflict.
Widespread shortages are paralyzing the country in ways in which will impact gravely on the general population in the months ahead, particularly the poorest and the most vulnerable. We do not yet have an accurate figure of the total number of casualties since the start of the crisis. The longer the current situation continues, the graver the humanitarian situation will become.
The UN humanitarian chief called for a halt to the fighting to allow food, water, medical supplies and other aid to be delivered to civilians. Authorized by the UN, a coalition of Western countries began a military operation in Libya in March to, quote, protect the civilian population there. However, the fighting between the revolutionaries and forces loyal to Libya's embattled ruler, Muammar Gaddafi, continued. On Monday, opposition forces said they've killed nearly 60 Gaddafi forces in a major battle west of the city of Ajdabiya. Earlier, we asked international lawyer Paul Wolf to tell us more about the role the United Nations is playing in the conflict in Libya.
Remember that there are two parts to the UN resolution. One is to protect civilians, and the second is a no-fly zone. And of course, I guess it's debatable whether the bombing raids that are being conducted are violating the no-fly zone. It certainly wasn't in the language of the resolution. But I think that the UN is in danger right now. I think that the UN is not one entity. It's not simply the Security Council. There are also a number of humanitarian agencies within the UN, and they really are trying to help people. And right now, they're not able to deliver food, water, and other medical supplies, things like that. That's why you have a kind of ironic situation where a military campaign that was authorized by the United Nations, and then you have the humanitarian chief of the United Nations trying to stop the campaign because they can't protect civilians, which was the original purpose of the military intervention in the first place.
Now, in Yemen, the popular uprising against the regime of Ali Abdullah Saleh is continuing amid efforts by regional and extra-regional countries like Saudi Arabia and the United States to keep the embattled president in power.
Protests continue against Yemen's long-time ruler in different parts of the country. The demonstrations have again turned violent. Several people were killed in the flashpoint city of Taiz after the security forces opened fire on the protesters. Dozens of others have been wounded. A water cannon attempts to disperse anti-government protesters, but the iron fist tactics of the regime have seemingly failed.
This week we have a program of escalation. There is a program of escalation. It will surprise everyone. And there is a block of undecided people. The protesters will resolve this situation in this week.
Ali Abdullah Saleh must leave. We want to build a civil state where there is democracy, where there is justice. Our only demand is that he go.
Some foreign countries are also playing their part in Yemen, but they're not siding with the Yemeni people. Neighboring Saudi Arabia is said to be pressuring Saleh, who's been in power for over 32 years, not to step down. Riyadh has also been putting forward plans to keep the unpopular president in the political spectrum and is trying to prevent the regime from collapsing. The U.S., which has traditionally been behind unpopular, despotic regimes in the region, is also turning a blind eye to the brutal crackdown in Yemen. However, the popular uprising against Saleh shows no sign of abating. Instead, it's gained momentum in recent weeks. It remains to be seen whether Saleh's allies can save him from buckling down under the heavy pressure of his own people.
Well, human rights groups have criticized the West for turning a blind eye to the brutal crackdown on pro-reform protests in Bahrain. The Bahrain Center for Human Rights says the response from the West has been timid. It says when compared to Libya, the Western response shows clear practices of double standards in its foreign policy. Nabil Rajab of the group says such policy has led to a significant rise in Saudi influence in the tiny Persian Gulf state. Manama has imposed a state of emergency in the country following the arrival of Saudi-led troops back in March. So far, dozens have been killed and hundreds arrested in the regime's clampdown. Saudi-led forces have swept up politicians, journalists and even medical staff. Several detainees have died in police custody. Rights groups accuse Manama of torture and abuse. Rights activists in Egypt have called for a protest in front of Saudi Arabia's embassy in Cairo. The rally is set to condemn Saudi interference to prevent the trial of Egypt's ousted president Hosni Mubarak. Reports say the protesters will also call on Riyadh to stop backing radical groups that threaten Egypt's security. Saudi billionaire Prince Al-Walid bin Talal has reportedly offered a huge amount of money in a bid to hurdle Mubarak's trial. Al-Walid recently met with a number of authorities in the new Egyptian government and reportedly proposed to pay them some $4 billion. He also sought immunity from prosecution for Mubarak's family. Well, in Cairo, the No to Military Trials for Civilians campaign has held its third conference to pressure the ruling Supreme Council of the Armed Forces to release civilians tried in military courts. More on that now from our correspondent.
No to Military Trials for Civilians was the name of one of the latest in a series of conferences organized by Egyptian activists against the trialing of ordinary civilians in the harsh circumstances of military courts. Speakers in the conference spoke out against what they referred to as arbitrary arrests, excessive use of violence and torture, as well as military tribunals which have been carried out by the military since they came in power after the Egyptian Revolution.
Many protesters have been labeled as thugs, which is not true. We shouldn't ask the military council to reconsider the verdict. We should ask them to release the protesters.
According to Human Rights Watch, 5,000 civilians have been subjected to sentences issued by military courts since February, and estimates of other organizations reach 7,000 individuals. Some families of those who have been trialed attended the conference to give their testimonials.
My son took part in the revolution and was even injured. Now he is in jail, and I'm asking the council to have mercy on him.
The officials are expected to do something about this. We're suffering because of our children.
Egypt is under the rule of the Supreme Military Council since the toppling of Mubarak, and under the council's rule, civilians face military courts for minor accusations. In a single court session, an average of 30 to 40 people are trialed, with no lawyer available and with each trial lasting about 30 minutes.
Many were arrested, questioned and tried in a short period of time, which is so unfair. They should stop all these unjust trials.
The Supreme Military Council has not issued a statement on the matter yet.
It's highly unlikely in the new post-Mubarak mid-revolution Egypt that activists will lose momentum advocating against the military trials for civilians. But when and if the Supreme Military Council will realize the strain this procedure puts on its relation with the people is yet to be seen. Mai Kamel, Press TV, Cairo.
You're with Press TV's World News. Another look now at the headlines. Iran's president warns the U.S. against extending the Afghanistan war to neighboring Pakistan. The U.S. says it will not apologize for its recent military operation north of the Pakistani capital, Islamabad.
We also do not apologize for the action that we took, that this president took.
Several explosions rocked the Libyan capital Tripoli as the embattled ruler Gaddafi's compound comes under attack. And several people are killed as Yemeni forces open fire on anti-regime protesters. To stay with us, still to come here on Press TV, the garbage crisis in Italy. We'll be back with the latest. Welcome back. Egypt's Attorney General has formed a team of prosecutors to investigate last weekend's deadly clashes in the capital, Cairo. The prosecutors have already reported a number of the dead had suffered gunshot wounds to the head or the chest. On Monday, security forces arrested dozens suspected of involvement in Saturday's sectarian clashes. This brings to 213 the number of those arrested for their part in the violence. Also on Monday, thousands demonstrated in Alexandria to condemn the violence. The clashes between Salafis and Coptic Christians erupted after the Salafis tried to free a Christian woman. They claimed the woman was being held against her will because she wanted to convert to Islam. Earlier, we spoke to our correspondent in Cairo, Karim Gamaluddin, and he gave us an account of the situation there.
The majority of the Egyptians are disappointed at what happened, and they are saying that there are hidden forces that are trying to cause this tension between the people, and also many people think that, as well as activists think that the Salafis that have been protesting outside the church in Imbaba are being supported by foreign countries such as Saudi Arabia and are causing this sectarian strife in the Egyptian community.
Elsewhere in the news now, the European Union says it's imposing an arms embargo on Syria in the wake of recent violence across that country. An EU statement says the 27-nation bloc has also decided to impose a travel ban on 13 Syrian officials. It says the measures will take into effect from Tuesday. The EU foreign policy chief says the sanctions aim to achieve an immediate policy change in Syria. Catherine Ashton has warned the bloc will consider extending the restrictive measures in light of developments. Syria has been hit by a wave of violent protests since March. Rights groups say more than 600 people have been killed. The protesters blame the government for the violence, but Damascus says armed groups and foreign elements are responsible. Meanwhile, in a bid to further develop trade relations between Tehran and Damascus, Iran has opened its products exhibition in Damascus. Our reporter tells us more.
Iran has recently opened an exhibition of its products in the Syrian capital of Damascus. 120 Iranian companies participated in the activity. The exhibition displays latest Iranian products, including engineering devices, foodstuffs, chemicals, handicrafts, textile industries, and auto spare parts.
There's a trade agreement between the two countries aiming at facilitating the exchange of goods. Syria also held a number of exhibitions in Iran, and we seek to have permanent fairs in the two countries.
Iran and Syria are linked with a number of trade and commercial agreements. The two countries recently signed a free trade agreement aiming at increasing the volume of their trade transactions. Syrian and Iranian officials say that the exhibition aims at acquainting the Syrian consumers and businessmen with the latest Iranian industrial products.
The goal of the exhibition is to increase the volume of trade between Iran and Syria. The expo also aims at acquainting the Syrian citizen with Iranian goods.
The Iranian exhibition is the second of its kind over the past 2 years. In February 2011, Iran opened the high-tech expo at the fairgrounds in Damascus. This exhibition runs until May 20th.
Iran and Syria say that such activities enhance relations between the two countries, while the two sides plan to increase the volume of their trade to $5 billion in the coming years. Khaldun Radio, Press TV, Damascus.
The United Nations has released a new report on the plight of Palestinians in East Jerusalem, Al-Quds. Hank Flynn has the details from New York.
Illegal Israeli settlements in the heart of Palestinian residential areas are doubly damaging to already tense relationships in East Jerusalem, Al-Quds, according to a new UN report on humanitarian concerns there. According to the report, 35% of the land has been confiscated for the construction or expansion of Israeli settlements, while a mere 13% has been zoned for Palestinian residential use.
Over 2,000 homes demolished since 1967, and contrast that with the thousands of housing units for settlements which have been constructed in East Jerusalem.
In this report, a vast array of humanitarian concerns facing East Jerusalem, Al-Quds Palestinians are outlined, including access to medical care and education. The report makes numerous recommendations, including the stoppage of settlement building and the prioritizing of housing and zoning for Palestinians, recommendations that have been made numerous times over the years, but have fallen on deaf ears. The last popular effort by the UN Security Council to condemn settlement building in occupied areas was knocked down by a U.S. veto just 3 months ago. Former American President Jimmy Carter likened the situation to apartheid, and while the report doesn't use that term, it details very specific double standards for Palestinians and Israelis.
If they marry someone from the West Bank, there's problems in the non-Jerusalem partner living in East Jerusalem. There's problems in the registration of children. We've got one of our sources says up to 10,000 children who are not Palestinian children who are not registered in East Jerusalem.
Dolphin acknowledged that the problems plaguing Palestinians are well established and that only a true political solution would bring any real change. He did say that the report establishes for the first time that it is official policy that creates the humanitarian problems that exist. Palestinian authorities continue to work toward achieving a successful vote on statehood in the UN General Assembly later this year. Hank Flynn, Press TV, New York.
International activists are preparing a large aid flotilla aimed at breaking the crippling Israeli siege on Gaza.
Our mission is humanitarian and political. In fact, we're confronted with Israel that is responsible for the blockade of 1.5 million people in Gaza.
Organizers say they plan to launch the sea convoy in the third week of June. The announcement comes after a coalition of activists held a meeting in Paris. The statement says Freedom Flotilla 2, consisting of around 15 vessels and over 1,000 activists, will depart from various European ports, including Marseille in France. The target date for the convoy's departure is just over a year after another Gaza-bound aid flotilla was attacked by Israeli forces. 9 Turkish activists were killed when Israeli commandos attacked the flotilla in international waters in May 2010. A protest has been organized in front of the U.S. Justice Department against elder abuse and neglect by courts, lawyers, social workers, and state agencies. Mike Kellerman tells us more.
We demand our civil rights! They are a small but growing movement called the National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse. They say the disabled and elderly are being preyed upon by the legal system, by crooked lawyers and the courts, who they say scam millions of dollars by having older people declared guardians of the courts, depriving them and their families of their rights and taking their assets. They say that the courts are abusing the guardianship laws and that people's civil rights, constitutional rights, are being violated by the courts. Protesting in front of the Justice Department, they met with a few members of Congress demanding something be done. With millions of baby boomers turning into senior citizens soon, they're warning that billions of dollars will be stolen from the elderly and their families by probate courts, which they're claiming conspire with lawyers and state agencies like Adult Services to rob older people of their homes and life savings, often declaring them without proper evidence incompetent to handle their own financial affairs. It's a big business, they say, lawyers getting rich.
They grab the estate and divvy it up, and they intend to do that for the baby boomers because it will now bring in trillions to their pockets.
They're destroying my family. I mean, they took all my rights away, my husband's rights.
We are the victims because we are trying to protect our parents, our husbands, our wives, our sons, our daughters, our spouses from exploitation, financial exploitation.
Assault on the elderly and their golden years, says the group, citing case after case of the judicial system collaborating to put elderly or disabled people in a conservatorship status with the courts, giving the lawyers and the courts, without family having a say, complete control over an elderly person's life savings.
In a matter of moments, a person loses their entire liberty and dignity, their decision-making ability, and it's handed over to third persons that absolutely take total control of their lives.
The aging of the U.S. population in record numbers over the next 5 years, the baby boomer generation, they say that unless what they call a corrupt system is fixed, millions will be robbed of all they own by unscrupulous lawyers, social workers, corrupt probate courts, and the state agencies who are supposed to be protecting the elderly, not abusing them. Mike Kellerman, Press TV, Washington.
In Italy, 170 soldiers have been deployed to clear garbage in Naples. The order comes ahead of local elections in the city slated for next week. Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi has repeatedly pledged to solve the garbage crisis in Naples. More than 3,000 tons of uncollected garbage in the country's third biggest city is reportedly attributed to years of municipality mismanagement. Well, that's all the time we have for this edition of the news here on Press TV. Do stay with us. I'll be back at the top of the hour with a brief look at the top stories.